Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light, Washington's most refreshing beer.
Now, here's a six-pack of questions.
John!
Yes?
It's not easy being squeezy.
It's not easy being squeezy,
It's not easy being squeezy.
What do you mean? He got like $6 million a year and he's a guard.
Yeah, but now he's got no job. He's got to come back and look at the Seahawks. Do you think he's going to find a spot here?
You know, I at first I'd say no because they've kind of gone a different direction with the offensive line. But like anything else, it depends on the price. And so, for example, if he feels that, if he wants to sign for the minimum and might be considering doing that, then it makes a valid point to bring him back because, you know, they liked him here. Now, remember, he's like 290. So it's not like that 328 to 340 pound guy that they like on the Mike Solari offensive line. But he's had great success here and did such a good job to a point where he did get to $6 million to move on to Tampa Bay. But the fact that he's making the first visit here and not Oakland does say something.
You know, I think he created one of my favorite moments of watching Pete Carroll scream at somebody. Do you remember that preseason game?
No.
Yeah. And JR had like this, just like he always was, he played sort of, they say, to the echo of the whistle, but he was going downfield trying to knock somebody out and ended up getting a penalty for it. And I remember reading Pete's lips, what he said to him. It was pretty funny. It was pretty awesome because you don't see Pete, you know.
No, he usually doesn't tear into guys.
Yeah, so anyway, it didn't last very long, but it was very amusing. But how did they, obviously they didn't get their money's worth down there, John, but when he did play, were they happy with him down there, or was it
No.
the same old type of things where he was one of those hit-or-miss guys?
Well, it just was – he started the season pretty well, but then I think he started to fade. Now, of course, the first season he had nothing because the back injury that he suffered apparently that nobody knew about in his last season with the Seahawks kept him out the entire year. And then he started out and he was doing okay, and then it just kind of faded, and then he got the broken leg, and that was a season for him. So in 2 years, they didn't get the $6 million value, and you know they had a couple other young prospects that they felt that, okay, let's try to do that, and they clear up a little bit of cap room by letting him go. So it's a deal like so many in free agency that simply did not work out.
John, we got the news from Cam Chancellor via social media that he's apparently going to retire in quotation marks. The three questions I have for you, Professor, Ring of Honor, Hall of Fame, and retiring his number, which ones will happen with Cam Chancellor?
I think Ring of Honor. I think possibly retiring the number and not the Hall of Fame.
So two out of three.
Two out of three, yeah. Because he's meant so much. I was talking to Dave Grosby about this because it's on Bob and Groz when the two of them were just doing the show together. Cam was on and Cam came in and made a statement. It's like my job is to lower the boom. And they naturally, as soon as the interview was over, were taking text questions and ideas and stuff. And somebody texted in, why don't we call him the Legion of Boom? And so on Bob and Groz, they created the Legion of Boom. And that's exactly what it was. And when you think about how that persona has been, I mean, that was the soul of this team. But he was the one that leveled the boom. And so because of that, he's got such a special place that I think he merits two out of those three. And where I say no to the Hall of Fame is that, it took probably unfairly, 25 years for Ken Easley to make it in. And Ken Easley only had 8 seasons like Cam Chancellor. And, of course, Easley was, 27 or so when he had to quit because of the kidney problem that he had from basically taking Advil. And, that it hurt his chances because he didn't have that long career. Also, Ken had 32 interceptions to 12 for Cam. So Cam was great in the box. He certainly, I think he has maybe a decent chance to get all decade, but I don't think he's going to be. I think he's going to fall short because safeties don't make it so much as we've seen so far with like guys like John Lynch. Look how long it took Brian Dawkins to get in. It's tough for safeties to do it. Now, Ed Reed should get in. Troy Polamalu should get in. Earl Thomas has a chance to get in. I think it's going to fall short for Cam.
But maybe like a Kenny Easley type of thing down the road, right? Just like getting in as maybe like what did Kenny
senior.
Go in at? Yeah, senior or something because it's same. Yeah, like you said, same situation. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about comparable people in the NFL, and I know you can come up with Steve Atwater, Kenny Easley, just the way he took on offensive linemen though. There's never been a safety that's been able to do that.
No, I mean, I don't know. You remember David Fulcher?
Yeah, Fulcher, yeah. He was like a linebacker back there. That's a good call,
Bengals?
John. Yeah, he played for the Bengals. Well, I think he was an Arizona State guy.
Yeah, he was Arizona State, and then I would say that Atwater would be a comparable, although not as tall. I mean, he kind of hit the same way. Still you wonder. It's like, okay, I know he was much smaller because of a different body type, but Jack Tatum, what a hitter he was. Donnie Shell, what a hitter he was. But the great part, what I like about Cam, he came in and naturally you do things from a young age and it's hard to change that. And he would hit a little too high and get the penalties. Well, he was able to adjust his launching points and get it to now he was knocking guys out legally. Now, I know that the Vernon Davis one, it drew the flag, but again, it was a fair hit.
Yeah.
John, what's the specifics when it comes to his salary? So is it $6.2 million this year that's guaranteed that the Seahawks will have to pay?
$6.8 million base this year and $5.2 next year on injury guarantees. And clearly, as he said, the neck has not progressed. It's still the same. And so that's problematic. So, they're on the line right now for $12 million. But let's say that he does retire. The team then can come back and say, well, we've got $2.5 million of proration each of the next 2 years. And, we should maybe offset that with the 5.2. And maybe, Cam takes a position. It's like, okay, we'll just make it a wash. Give me the 6.8. And then, I would have to think that if you're Pete Carroll and you're this organization, you've got to find a way to get him on the coaching staff at some point. Because I think he'd be such a great asset to the team because you know how good he is coaching up the guys now, in the last year when he was hurt. He was so good at that. And so, he might have a longer future with this organization if he can work out some kind of a settlement, which you can do. But then that's up to him, and that's up to the Seahawks. Now, cap relief-wise, they don't get any cap relief this year. If they put him on the retired list, they may have to absorb the $5.2 million this year. So my guess is he just stays on the physically unable to perform list unless he reaches a settlement that wipes out the $5.2 million of an injury guarantee.
Well, why would Cam want to settle?
He may not. But also, let's say that he wants to move on. Let's say that he wants to get into coaching, right? And you get paid as a coach, so it's not going to be the $5.2 million. It depends if he wants to worry more about the money, worry about a future. Now, like a lot of players, it may be hard for them the first year out of football to be a coach because it's a lot of time. It's an investment of time that probably is something that he'd like to spend time with the family and spend time in here. But I think he's a guy that loves the game of football too much. That can be an option. But again, it's $5.2 million, and technically he's entitled to it.
I think that Lofatupu kind of came to that same sort of breaking point where, because Lofa has a young family, beautiful young family, and, the amount of time that you put in as a coach, I think, Cam Chancellor, maybe the first year, but how long did Lofa coach?
He was on the staff 2 years.
2 years, and then, it's also tough, John, for some of the guys now because of the amount of money that they made. It's like, I don't really have to work. And, man, you got to really love it, I think, to be an ex-player right now and go right into coaching.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's, again, it's that's going to be more up to him and then more up to the team. And naturally, there's such a good feeling, I think, organizationally by Cam Chancellor. They don't want to take things away from him. But, I think there can be a settlement that, can work for both sides. And that could, I think, be the settlement. It's like, okay, we'll, you take this season and enjoy yourself with the family. You're going to get the $6.8 million. Now we get to January or at the end of the season, and we work out a settlement saying, okay, why don't you give us back, some of the proration, and you get to, go ahead and start working on the coaching staff.
Is there anybody that's done a better job of taking their head out of hits? Because remember 2011, he had all of those fines that he had, but then even the hit on, which you could argue, Vernon Davis on the goal line. But then you fast forward a couple years ago, and you see him. He did a really good job with that, as far as, and I wonder if the NFL might be able to. He might get involved with them. I know Mac Strong does a lot of things with the NFL, but for him, I mean, he would be the poster boy for a guy that did hit with his head and then started really doing a good job taking it out of it.
Yeah, and that's why I give him so much credit because, I mean, you know how hard it is. I mean, you train your body, so it's like, you know, it's not like you're sitting there thinking when you're trying to hit somebody. I mean, you're almost, you have to have the instincts and you have to have the mechanical things going on with your body to execute it, and it's not something you can think. And so, you know, you put it in auto drive and then go make the hit. Well, he was able to adjust that whole process and change where he launched and what he did, and did it so well, probably as well as any player I've seen in the last, say, 10 years.
How big of a drop-off will it be to Bradley McDougald or perhaps Delino Hill?
It's a drop-off. I mean, I don't know. It's maybe as distinct as the Robinson Cano taking him out, where you lose about 0.4 runs per game. You go from 4.6 to 4.2, so there's going to be a drop-off. But still, just like the Mariners, it can still be successful because, again, you have the background of what you saw last year. You know, they after the Arizona game when Sherman and Cam Chancellor were injured, you know, they didn't have Cliff Avril, so they're going out without three of the guys. They still only gave up 61% completions. It was about 190 some yards passing a game. Certainly the quarterback rating was a little bit higher, but still it was respectable. And I think they gave up maybe 20 to 22 points. So now that they've, you know, because you think about what happened to them 2 years ago in the final four or five games when they lost Earl Thomas. They didn't have an ability to be able to respond to it. Last year, they took extra chances. They drafted two safeties. They brought in Bradley McDougal. And so if any of these, if either one of the safeties weren't able to play, they had answers. And so now I think that they have answers. And so they, with the fact that this is now the second year that they'll have these guys around, I think that they'll actually improve a little bit. They won't be as good as they were with Cam, but there will be a drop-off. But I still think they're not going to be that bad.
John, I just saw this over the weekend that the USFL Championship Trophy has been delivered to the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and they're actually going to have a display. They're going to put together a display this summer for the league, which operated three seasons, mm-hmm. kind of 83 to 85. Maybe it's because of that was kind of the age when I very first got really interested in sports, and I remember reading old copies of Sports Illustrated. I was really into the USFL. I think it's cool that they're doing something like that. I know Jeff Perlman, who's a former Sports Illustrated writer, he's got a book coming out on it. What are your memories of the USFL?
Just how how they were able to get players. I mean, you know, you think about in a time that the NFL was growing and all that stuff, they're able to get the Reggie Whites. They were able to go and grab some of the top players to a point when the league folded after 3 years. I mean, now, I mean, if you lined yourself up and got in the position to get some of those players, you got really good. I mean, you add Reggie White to that defense that Wade Phillips coached. I mean, that was phenomenal. You know, Jerome Brown and all that. And so there was probably more good players in that league than you expect. I mean,
Jim Kelly,
Herschel Walker.
Yeah.
Steve Young, he played for the LA
That's
Express, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Did you think about, I guess the USFL would have been folded by the time you came out.
Yeah, I remember, the thing I remember, there was a linebacker for the Niners that signed with the USFL team, and I remember he got a $400,000 contract, and I was like, oh my God, that was all the money in the world back then. So, yeah, his name was, I'll have to look it up. But anyway, that's when, you know, the numbers started going up in the NFL as well.
What effect did the USFL have on the way the NFL did business, John?
What it did, I just think it make them more aware, make them more protective, trying to make sure that they never would have another league that would be able to compete against them. So like when the XFL came up, I mean, they had no chance. I mean, this is kind of like the wild, wild west back then, because you had the CFL, and they all of a sudden wanted to start getting players, and they got Tom Cousineau, and they were trying to rob players over. And then you have the USFL, and you know, I remember still going to that one of the most fun meetings I ever went, the USFL meeting in 1984 at Amelia Island, Florida, where Donald Trump, you know, took a whole stack of New York papers, threw them on the table, and says, I never get this kind of publicity just selling real estate. Look at this. We're going to take on the NFL and beat them. And, of course, they took them to court, and they did beat them. I mean, they got a $3 prize out of it because they took the $1 of the victory and trebled it because it was an antitrust type of case. That didn't do well for the league, and it ended up folded. But, you know, it was just great to see the competition that was going on. And for somebody that was able to spend a lot of time like investigating in that stuff, because back in the early 80s, once the football season ended, there really wasn't much. I mean, the draft was in February, and so you had this long period of time that nothing was going on because you didn't have free agency. But now with the USFL, I mean, it was, Mike Rozier went to Pittsburgh Maulers, and I mean, it was great.
Small potatoes.
Yeah, that was.
Remember, that was my Trump imitation there. Yeah. That was the 30 for 30.
It was a good one.
Thing. Yeah, that was a good
one. What was your favorite team? I think mine was the Oakland Invaders or maybe the Tampa Bay Bandits. I liked Bandit
I liked the Tampa Bay Bandits.
Yeah. Well, the only one I really knew of was the Invaders because they were right there. My brother went to a tryout, I think.
Oh, did you really?
Because he. That was about the time. The linebacker I was trying to remember is Todd Shell. Mm-hmm, Brigham Young guy, played for San Francisco.
First round from Ohio State?
Brigham Young.
Brigham Young, okay.
Brigham Young guy. So, but hey, John, how do you think the Washington Redskins are going to do with Alex Smith there?
I think they'll be okay. In fact, there's some people think their offense will get a little bit better because say what you want. I like Kirk Cousins a lot. I think that he's certainly, for a fourth-round pick, has done an incredible job. I mean, he's consistently able to get 4,000 yards. And I think you saw in the Seahawk game last year, I mean, his offensive line had 6 injuries, and so they didn't have anybody. The block, and so he took a pounding and then came back and won that game. That really showed a lot. But the strain of the contract negotiations for 2 years did, I think, cause a little bit of a rift with some of the players on the team. Some players thought he was disinterested, which wasn't true. But, what Alex, I think, goes in there with a little bit of a different approach. I look at him, he had his best season, I thought, last year, because at the beginning of December, he was in the mix, in the conversation for being an MVP. He was throwing deep, something that he never did before. He was getting the ball downfield.
Hardly any interceptions, right?
Yeah, 26 touchdowns and 5 interceptions.
Yeah.
I mean, he was really good. In fact, I was talking to somebody today, and I was saying, it's like, yeah, I think, maybe he is an elite quarterback, but I would say I would never have said that from 2005 to 2016. I always had him what I consider to be the Chad Penningtons. Chad Pennington played for the Jets and the Dolphins, and he'd get the team into the playoffs and lose the first game. But Alex was always good enough once he got reestablished in San Francisco to get a team into the playoffs and then maybe lose a game. But I thought that, so I've had him in the second level. Last year, even though he lost the playoff game, I thought he made the first level. May just be a 1 year stand, but I think he'll do well with Washington.
Yeah, I think so too. I think it's going to be interesting to see how he does with Jay Gruden, and I'm trying to remember who the offensive coordinator is there. But the last 2 years, John, he 67.5% completion percentage, and you mentioned I remember it was like week 9 or 10 before he threw his first interception.
Right.
So yeah, that'll be an interesting project.
So I guess that means if you think Alex Smith is going to have a good season there in Washington, you feel that Paul Richardson will too?
You would think so, yeah. I mean, because they've got a lot of kind of strange parts that haven't worked out since they chased away DeSean Jackson and Pierre Garçon. And so somebody has to step up. I don't know how he's going to do for numbers, but first they have to sort it out because they have first-round picks and other picks that have been there but really haven't established themselves at the wide receiver position. And now with the new quarterback, it's going to be interesting to see how that looks going to be. Where Paul may fit in so well, I think he's so good at the crossing routes, and how fast he can get downfield. So he can probably do so well, and he did well enough to get $8 million a year.
Mentioned J.R. Sweezy possibly looking – would he go to Oakland? The Seahawks taking a look at him. John, it inspired me. I heard an interview with Tom Cable. It was a couple weeks ago, and Jessamine just dug into it to find what I think might be my favorite Tom Cable quote ever.
I like big humans. I like big humans.
I thought that was really funny.
That is funny.
I like big humans.
Now, is that big human singular or as a name person, or should it be humans?
No, it's just in general. Like Sir Mix-a-Lot, he was a guy that liked big butts.
That's
and
right.
You know what Tom Cable likes?
I like big humans.
Well, that's what I kind of wonder about with Sweezy and with Mike Solari and that. Is his butt big enough to fit the profile of what they want?
Yeah, and would you say he's like 290?
Yeah, 290.
Well, and that he was also one of those guys that, like, if he got down the middle of you, he was going to humiliate you.
Yeah.
But there was some whiffs in there as well.
Yeah, you just get him all revved up and see exactly and let him get turned loose. He was He was a guy that definitely defensive linemen disliked a great deal because of the
we had a little bit of that Kevin Mawai where it's like, okay, is the whistle gone yet? Oh, yeah, it did. Okay, I better stop after a couple seconds.
Yeah, that would be there. John, one of the things, Cam Chancellor walking away, one of the things, he and Earl were so good together, yet they've played at a time where we've kind of watched safeties, I don't want to say devalued, but contracts have not gone up at that position. And this offseason, safety salaries absolutely took a
Well, this season, it, I mean, because, I mean, you know, Cam got his $12 million average, and Rashad Jones got his $12 million average, and Eric Berry got his $13 million, but it's been a very select group in getting that. I mean, the best one this year was Morgan Burnett getting about, what, 8.4, 8.5, and then everything else went south where Trey Boston and Kenny Vaccaro and Eric Reed, you know, they haven't even gotten contracts yet. I mean, I know Trey Boston was on radio about a week or so ago, and he was mad at what happened to him. He said he went to Indianapolis. The coach on the visit never saw him, and the general manager never saw him. He just kind of sat around and waited for somebody to talk to, and nobody really talked to him. Then he goes to Arizona. They spent a lot of time talking to him, but he didn't like the offer. And so what he said is that we've got to band together as safeties and not take minimum contracts. So former Seahawk Ron Parker just signed with the Atlanta Falcons. Guess what he got?
Minimum salary.
Yeah.
Why do you think that is? Why have contracts not gone up at that position?
I think this kind of demand. I mean, there's a little bit of a change right now because it's harder right now to really find the needs for those in the box run safeties, and so that's a problem. And so the strong safeties are taking the biggest hit because what you want is one, a safety that may have the ability like Deion Buchanan to be able to cover, and so you got more of those guys, Malcolm Jenkins and that, and so it's kind of changing that second safety position. And most teams seem to have their free safety, or at least have a young enough free safety that they like, that they're not making any changes.
So both Vaccaro and Eric Reed are still out there?
That's correct, yeah.
Which one are you more surprised by?
Eric Reed.
Yeah.
Now, again, I think so much of it is tied to the national anthem, which is unfair.
Do you?
Oh, yeah.
Do you think a lot of it's that?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, again, this is not collusion. I mean, you can't get 32 owners to agree on anything.
Yeah.
So I don't believe in the collusion idea. But, I mean, he's too good to be on the street.
Well, I agree with you on that, John. I'm glad you said it because whenever they bring up the collusion, I'm like, these guys will sell out their own mother to get a championship. Come on. There's no way that they're competitive. They're competing against each other. And I find it hard to believe. And I think that's one of those that gets entirely overdone,
mm-hmm.
that people draw conclusions and they try to connect the dots. And that's one where you got to understand the nature of the owners, right?
Right.
Yeah, but aren't they thinking about their fans, too, when they're making these decisions?
Well, they should have done that at the owners' meeting if they thought about their fans by at least going to the old way of doing it and not having the players on the field but by having it so, the players who want to protest, they have to stay in the locker room. We'll make a scene out of that, and you still keep it in the equation and then anger the players even more.
Yeah, I totally agree with you on that. That is so ridiculous because now, the cameras are just going to go ahead and just put the cameras on the guys that are coming out of the locker room. It's going to be the same thing. I mean, you won't see them protesting it, but we know that they are, right?
Mm-hmm. No question.
Professor, we always appreciate it. We look forward to catching up with you tomorrow.
Okay, thank you.
If you missed any of today's Cold Hard Facts brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light, Washington's most refreshing beer, download the podcast, 710sports.com. I don't know if it was worth it. I think I wasted 12 minutes of Jessamine's life to find this.
I like big humans.
Worth it.
It was well worth it.
Was it worth it? Okay.
Absolutely.
All right. What was the best part about the Mariners weekend? We'll tell you next.
This is Danny, Dave, and Moore.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle Sports app.
Reached out to some Seahawks players. Russell Okung didn't have time to come on, but he did send me a message. And I thought it's worth reading because Cam Chancellor indicating that he's walking away from the game, leaving the game after his neck failed to heal. Here was what Russell had to say. Cam was a leader amongst men on day one. He has such an energy, passion, and zeal for life, and it became infectious in the locker room. He gave everything he had for the game. My favorite play was the NFC playoff game against the 49ers. In a previous game, he had already got a good hit on Vernon Davis, and I asked him during the week if he would do it again. With this crazed look in his eyes, he told me never to doubt that he wasn't going to set the tone of the game. Vernon was running down the sideline, and Bam Bam was at it again. I think you hear, and this was clear covering that team, the way guys looked to Cam and the way that they responded to the hits he had. He really was an enforcer on that defense.
I was on with Bob Gross and Tom and kind of reflecting on, I just remember coaches time and time again saying, go out there and set the tone, right? And so, you know, when we played that clip of Demaryius Thomas, how he got hit in the Super Bowl, I mean, that totally set the tone for the rest of the game. And you saw passes going around. That was a really good offense. Like, they were like 2 or 3 yards away from being like the best offense in the history of the NFL. I think the Saints, the year they won the Super Bowl, had a little tiny bit better. Well, I can't remember. It was close to like, were they getting 400 yards a game? Some ridiculous amount of yardage that they would rack up. And he entirely took it. They became a different team. Now, look, maybe if you don't get that hit and you don't get that snap over Peyton Manning's head for the safety, if you play him 10 times, I still think the Seahawks would have won 6 or 7. But there's no way you get that result. And that came from that hit. And, Danny, I remember when you said you had a vote for Super Bowl MVP, and he also got an interception in that game. So, and that's the thing about him. He could set the tone in a lot of different ways. So, and the interception he got in that game was like a badly thrown ball by Peyton Manning, which I think also was they were something that went haywire with their routes and the way that Peyton Manning was running throwing the ball. So, yeah, setting the tone is always one of those sort of cliches that you hear, but he truly did do that. You knew that it was going to be a long day if you're a receiver getting hit on the first series.
Well, he was the physical presence that Pete Carroll wanted from his team, too, on that side of the ball, and then you had Marshawn Lynch on the other side of the ball, and so those were the kind of things that Pete wanted. One of the things I appreciate – well, two things. One that I really appreciated about him was I think that he seemed like a soft-spoken guy, and then, Dave, you mentioned after that Atlanta playoff game that when he spoke, I think people tended to listen more because he didn't really speak up all that often. And so I just love that leadership quality that he had. And the one thing I've never forgotten about him, and I know that other players have probably done it, maybe it stands out to me because I saw a video of it, was when he bought his mom a house, which I thought was really cool, the way that mom raising him and then going back and taking her into that new house. And so – yeah, just a class act all the way around, Cam Chancellor.
And thanks to Russell Okung for sending that in. He was part of the same draft class with Cam Chancellor that first year in 2010. It is the happy hour. It's brought to you by Heritage Distillings, BSB, Brown Sugar Bourbon. There's only one regret I have from watching the weekend Mariners series. The only regret I have is I wish that when D. Gordon had been told by the home plate umpire that he needed to tuck in his jersey because it was untucked and flowing when he came up to bat in the bottom of the first on Saturday night, and the kind of saw the umpire told him he needed to tuck it in, and he kind of looks at him. I wish he would have just said to him, in the future, we don't tuck him in, bro.
Well, what's funny is that, okay, so they made him tuck it in. Felix didn't have to tuck his in. Felix had to wear his hat forward, and Gordon got to wear his hat backwards.
I think the issue at the plate was that if your clothing gets hit, I think that.
Right.
They don't allow you to come up there wearing a house dress.
Okay. Well, that makes sense.
Totally makes sense. Because I was going to say, well, what would happen if D. Gordon just told him no?
Yeah, I think.
I'm not tucking it in.
I'm not sure if they would they bring out somebody. He could have also said, and somebody pointed this out, Chris Sullivan from Cairo, that, yeah, well, in the future, umpires don't exist. Yeah. We're going to have robots that'll be able to do the job. I think actually my favorite play, I loved Ben Gamel's triple. I'm not sure why I liked it so much. Everything Ben Gamel did over the weekend and in that game Saturday night especially, absolutely thrilled me. I thought it was absolutely awesome.
Gamel is unbelievable, as we talked about it. I think, you know, there's different players to watch. I mentioned Ryan Healy, just a guy that's not, you know, you got your D. Gordon and you got Gene Segura and Paxton, but right now, Gamel is the guy that really catches my eye. I agree with you. And it's ridiculous what his average is, considering I think he had 4 hits in the beginning in the first month. He only played in, I think, 13, 14 games. But he started off, he put himself behind the 8-ball, and now his average is up to 300. And not seeing like home run power or anything, but he's fast, man. That kid can motor. So he's really exciting to watch. And I was interested by the tattoos as well. I was really curious what that was. I thought it was a former girlfriend that was on his arm there.
It was a lion.
It was apparently a lion, as Stacy Ross said from 710sports.com. It was a lion with really good bone structure.
There was. Aslan, maybe? Is that from Narnia? I'm not sure.
Is that the name of the lion?
I think so. But I might be incorrect about that. I might not be up on my nerd game.
I wouldn't know a lion with bad bone structure from one with good bone structure, would you?
Well, I think what she meant was that it did kind of look like a woman from afar.
That it right? was a lion.
And then there was the flowing mane.
Yeah, because sometimes about an attractive lady, you would say a really good bone structure that would be there. So she was making the point that it was a good-looking lion.
I got it. You know what I love is that somehow Service is able to figure out whether he should start Span, whether he should start Gamble. They're both left-handed hitters. Both play good defense. I think at this point in Span's career, maybe Gamma's a little better than Span is. But still, I figured that one of the guys would suffer as a result, and neither one has. I hope that'll continue. They're both hitting right around 300, and they're both playing great, clutch hitters, and coming through. Gamma came through with the RBI single yesterday that was the game winner. And I don't know how they're going to do that. Maybe they need to shuffle Haredi out of there a little more because he's been slumping, but he's your right-handed bat out there. He's a better center fielder, so it's a nice quandary to have.
What was your favorite play of the weekend?
My favorite play of the weekend? Probably the Gamble triple. I was trying to figure out, though, why the Kansas City left fielder dove for that one because he didn't really even come close.
Fake hustle, man.
It was
like it's fake hustle. Like if you get that close, you're like, I'm screwed. If I don't, I might as well look like I'm trying. Take a header.
You ever have a play like that when you're playing in the outfield? Where you misjudge it and the ball gets past you and there's nobody. I was playing softball for the 710 team. Jess, you were there, and there was a guy hit it in my eye. My vision is terrible. That's my excuse. But I went running in, and Stelton goes, back. And so it went over my head. It felt like it took 2 minutes for me to get to that ball. When I was watching that fielder run back and get that, if he'd have busted it out of the box a little bit more, because he was kind of looking to see where that was going to go, I'm not so sure he could have got home.
I think you could have sent him anyway. With the way he was dressed and the way he was looked, I wouldn't have put anything past him.
You think he's faster in that uniform?
Heck yeah.
Do you?
Anybody
you
that's watched fabric? The Dukes of Hazzard has been able to realize that. He could have slid right over the top of the General Lee. Woo-hoo! It is Danny David Moore. This is the Happy Hours brought to you by BSB, the brown sugar bourbon from Heritage Distilling. We sweep the down. That includes LeBron going to the Lakers. Yeah, color me surprised. We'll tell you why next.
Sweeping the dial. Streaming everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app and 710sports.com.
With this roster that you have now, with LeBron on this roster, I don't think it's going to be much of an issue for them to make the playoffs. I think the dreams are substantially bigger now. But like I said, LeBron accelerates the learning curve for these young guys. They'll be able to learn a lot faster because they'll get a chance to watch him work every single day.
It's Kobe Bryant talking about LeBron James going to the Lakers. This is the destiny that's been pointed at for more than a year, and there's part of me that's kind of excited to see it. Most glamorous player in the league going to the most glamorous franchise in the league, and I don't know if they're going to be all that much better than his Cleveland team is.
All right, don't hate me, because I know you guys are all NBA fans, but this is why I don't like the NBA, is that they're going to go to the playoffs now that LeBron's going there.
Yeah.
One player. Because that's you correct. Can isolate him, and he can play one-on-one and get his 35 points a game or whatever.
Yes.
And in no other sport is it a guarantee, and I'm not saying it's a total lock guarantee, but really good chance they go to the playoffs with LeBron.
Total lock guarantee they make the playoffs.
Okay, there we go. Just got a, what do they call that, the lead pipe solid lock there from Danny or whatever. So, I mean, to me, that bothers me that you can just go and buy a player. You just bought yourself a championship, Lakers. Congratulations.
All right.
No? Well, come on, give it back to me, Danny. I know you love the NBA.
I do love the NBA. It's a weird thing. LeBron's entering a strange point in his career where he's the best player of this generation for sure. He's the best player that's ever played the game. He's incredible. But the Lakers are not, they have work to do before they're going to actually be able to win a title. They're certainly not better than the Warriors, and they're probably not better than the Rockets this year.
I was looking at LeBron James. He'll be 34 this season. Michael Jordan, when he was 34, still averaging 28 points a game. You want some other numbers?
Yes.
Okay.
How much is LeBron averaging?
I'm not sure how much he's going to average, but I was more interested in the betting odds. The Lakers have gone from 16-1 to win the NBA championship to 7-2.
That's a stupid bet.
With LeBron James. Season tickets, $3,500 for Laker games when LeBron James joined them, $5,800. The home opener in the 300 level for LeBron James' debut with the Lakers, $500 a seat. Dave, would you pay that much to go watch LeBron James?
No, my God, no. I would get the tickets and then go scalp them.
I would too. And if I'm a Cavaliers fan, I'm fit to be tied. I want nothing to do with LeBron James.
He came back and won you a title.
Yeah, but to leave your hometown twice. That's weak.
This time he left it different.
Weak.
He didn't go on TV and say I'm taking my talents to L.A.
He averaged 27.5 last year, I guess.
He's a dominant player.
I still like Jordan better.
Jordan had that eye of the tiger. Like, LeBron's not quite the cold-blooded killer that Jordan was.
And Golden, well, they got to calm these two down. This is getting out of control. They need to calm this situation down. Oh, my Lord. These are ugly, ugly scenes right now. You won't believe what's going on. This is getting out of control. They need to clear the benches, get them out of here. Well, ladies and gentlemen, this is a side to basketball that we don't want to see, but this all stems from the fact that McGoy was antagonizing Golden, and this is why the officials need to act early, but really, security needs to get in and break this apart.
All right, Australia versus the Philippines, FIBA basketball qualifying. Who knew it was going to be this kind of bloodbath, but there was. That's one of the wildest fights that I've seen in a basketball game. We had a chair thrown. We had an NBA player who's a 7-footer trying to attempt flying knees. Two of them. He's jumping through.
Which
there.
Which player was that?
Thon Maker. Plays for the... Thon Maker. Plays for the Milwaukee Bucks.
Oh, yeah. You know him, right, Dave?
Yes.
Yeah.
Dave. I asked him, was it Thon or Ton? Are you sure?
Thong.
Thong.
Thong?
Yeah. I like to call
thong,
him Victoria...
Thong, thong, thong.
I like to call him Victoria's Secret because they are also Thon Makers.
Siraj,
very nice,
Siraj.
Thank you.
That had a touch of O'Neal to it, just a little bit of corniness. Well done.
I don't think that was a compliment, Siraj. The game just came.
No, it's okay. I'm sorry. I'll take it.
I meant it as a compliment.
Yeah, it was wild what happened.
There were some haymakers thrown there, and randomly, too. It was like, if you're in the other colored jersey, you're getting punched.
There were guys running and punching. In terms of, like, intention, like, there were terrible intentions on both sides. In terms of the actual execution of the violence, it was awful. Like, I don't think I've ever seen so many angry people do so little damage to each other.
The chair toss guy, though. I mean, the Australian kid looked like he was hurt there. You see how this game ended? The Philippines, after they had the ejections, they only had three players, and they let the game continue, and then they finally called it off when two of those three players fouled out.
There was one guy left?
Yeah.
He was going to play a zone the rest of the game.
I guess. That would have been fun to watch that. But no, the Aussie guy, he took the brunt of it with that chair.
Who knew that this could be a hazardous job? He's part of the crew here at Busch Stadium. That's Lucas Hackman with the Rally Cat last year. Ow! Then today, watch out as Lucas is putting the finishing touches on the Vote STL. There he is behind. Uh-oh, duck!
Come on!
Poor Lucas. I mean, it is a dangerous job.
Took it off the noggin there in the Washington Nationals game.
What was 50 Cent throwing out the first pitch?
It's not that bad. It was bad. Yeah, no, it was errant.
Who was the guy?
I can't remember who was throwing out the first pitch.
Yeah, it was a Cardinals groundskeeper, I think, and he was the guy that got the cat last year, and he got scratched getting cat off the field, and then he was doing a stencil thing there on the field, and he was behind home plate, and I think part of the problem was, and Clayton talked about it too, is that you're not used to the mound. I mean, when you throw it from the flat ground in front of the mound, still, if you get a chance to throw the first pitch, you got to do the full thing, don't you?
I think so.
You got to go to the rubber and throw it from there. But I think that's probably what threw the guy off a little bit.
It's like using your driver, Jim.
That's correct, Dave.
Go all the way.
That's right.
Did you see the guy that threw out the pitch the other night, or maybe it was yesterday? The guy who was in Alaska Airlines. He's flown 2 million miles.
That's pretty awesome.
That was the guy that threw out the first pitch.
Fly 2 million miles, you get to throw out a first pitch.
Yeah.
Why?
Because.
That's a lot.
That's an incredible accomplishment.
Jim, that's a lot of miles. That's one thing I know. That's a lot of miles.
So what, I go fly 2 million miles and automatically I get out there on the mound?
Yeah.
In about 35 years.
Yeah. You do 2 million hours of radio.
Oh, God.
I would like to throw. Wouldn't you like to throw out a first pitch? How much fun would that be?
I would like the challenge of it. Do you remember when I asked Blowers what the big deal was? And I have no idea why he said this, but he's like, yeah, I'm guessing that you would struggle. I'm like, me?
What he said?
Yeah, he did. And I was
what'd
like,
you say? I guess you'd struggle if you got in a football game, Mike.
No, what Dave said was that I threw the shot put in a high school.
Oh, geez. Yeah.
Now we're going to bring that up.
No, that's I know. It's just like up. Edwin Diaz. Every time I think, you know, I see those tapes from Worcester High back in the 80s.
Ooh, you got the name right.
I just betrayed you, Dave.
Yeah, you did, Danny. You did. You just sold me out on Jim's behalf for a laugh. All for a laugh. You'll do anything for a laugh. But, yeah, I don't know why he said that. I remember thinking, well, I threw a pretty mean snowball as a kid. I could throw a rock. I hit Bobby Spoletta in the head with a rock one time.
Did he bleed?
It was about 30 yards away. I don't remember if he bled, but I got suspended or whatever you want to call it, grounded. I was grounded in my front yard.
You couldn't leave your front yard.
Couldn't leave the front yard because I hit Bobby Spoletta in the forehead with a rock.
Is the suspension the worst punishment school administrators ever came up with?
No. It's fun.
Yeah, it's great.
All right, you get days off.
Yeah, you go to the beach. Remember that when Davey Bamford, after he beat up Jason Story outside a volleyball game at Aptos High School, they suspended him for the week. He came back tan. Yeah, he did. That is Sweep of the Dials, brought to you by Specialty Insulation. Coming up next, we're going to take you through Cam Chancellor and also the weekend that was for your Seattle Mariners.